This is a traffic and safety meeting on March 17th, 2021. I'll take a roll. Chairman Reese?
Here.
Commissioner Bates?
Here.
Commissioner Gillis? Commissioner Hoyt?
You're on mute,
Tim. Oh, sorry. Yeah, if you said that, you're muted.
Sorry, my bad. Here.
Fair enough. Commissioner J. Rahman? Commissioner Osga?
Here.
Commissioner Wade?
Here.
All right, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for participating. We're on Zoom. We might need to ask people to mute if they're not speaking, so we avoid feedback. And because we are on Zoom, we just need to be patient to have people comment one at a time. Jeff, I know for the record, I think Rick Gillis, Commissioner Gillis has joined us.
Got him.
I am here, yes.
Hi, Rick.
Hello, how are you guys?
Great. So we have a few people from the public here, and we have two items on the agenda. One with respect to a requested accommodation for parking up on Monroe Avenue, and another related to a no right turn for eastbound traffic on Greenfield and Lemoyne. If I may, I'd like to take the Greenfield and Lemoyne item first and ask if there are any members of the public here that wish to speak to the recommendation that eastbound Greenfield and Lemoyne be restricted to right turn only onto southbound Harlem during the hours of 7 to 9 a.m. and 4 to 6 p.m. Is there anyone from the public here on that issue? All right, and I think Jeff, you circulated, I think, a letter from one resident who was opposed to that and asked at least it to be tabled until there was a more comprehensive review of the effect of potential pass-through traffic in that area. Correct. So why don't I turn it over to the commissioners and ask if there's any comment from the members of the commission on this request.
I'm alphabetically first, so let me take my comments. I happen to have investigated this matter random afternoon during the hours that are in question. I parked on Lemoyne and Greenfield, and I must concur with the letter writer that the unintended consequence of the red light enforcement on North and Harlem has made two things happen. Number one, people find shortcuts going parallel to Harlem on the side streets out of North Avenue southbound. So all the streets, Lemoyne and others, Clinton and so on, all of them are par for the course. It's an easy right-hand turn, and so people shoot through there. Another consequence of that red light enforced corner is that because there are no frequent stops going southbound on any of those parallel streets to Harlem, there is a temptation of cars speeding around 45, 50 in down that way. It's an easy way to cut through the village and bypass the traffic on Harlem. I was astonished to see that it happened on all those parallel roads. So the recommendation that the writer says is to make a comprehensive a survey or something of that order. I noticed that we have statistics about questions about accidents over the various years until now. And so I would want to propose that we really consider not making a peak hour restriction for right-hand turns, but this is going to sound drastic, but I would like to suggest that we find some speed mitigation or disincentive for cutting through. Whatever that solution is, must be done. I witnessed that, and I don't live in that part of town.
I,
mean, we put a four-way stop at Bonnie Bray and Lemoyne last year, didn't we? Because of that, people cutting through. Everybody has to stop going southbound at Greenfield because they tee in. It's a tee stop there, right?
It is true.
So there's, and most of the streets have to stop at Lemoyne anyway. I don't think there's any of them that pass through going north-south at Lemoyne. So I don't know what the north-south issues are. Quite honestly, I'm not sure how putting a no right turn in there during those hours would make people want to, you know, cut through more. I didn't understand why that would be true.
Just to be clear, it's not a no right turn. It's a right turn only during rush hour.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you got it. Yeah, right turn. Sorry.
Well, and we've talked about this before. There really are two problems right now. One is what Johan has just said, and which I've said before, we do need to do a comprehensive review of that corner of the village because there is a lot of cut through. And we've talked about that many times as far as the parking up there. And when the light turns red, people just take their first right. The this particular request was for a resident who lives off of William, who when they try to get onto Harlem, they can be stuck there for several minutes because of someone trying to turn left onto Harlem and they can't turn right. So, you know, there's two separate issues here, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I think the restriction of no left turn will help people getting out of River Forest. But then separately, we got to talk about a comprehensive plan.
Well, can we, and I understand, and I'm kind of in Steve's camp on this, but I know that at least I take it that there's some concern that restricting the turn off of Greenfield and Lemoyne might have some other consequence. But hello. I guess I'd like to first see if we could take this question on its own merits and see if there's an interest in the commission to take just this request on its merits, which is, do we want to impose a limited right turn restriction on those two corners?
I'm all for not making a mountain out of a molehill here.
Hello.
Nothing gets done. You know, as we pile on block after block, you know, we're getting into.
Hello.
We can hear you.
Hi, could I get into the meeting?
You're in.
Yeah, but I'm waiting outside the door. It's locked.
The meeting's on Zoom.
It's a Zoom meeting.
I guess, okay, my name's Bob Armalis. I wanted to make public comment on this. Inappropriate outside. I didn't know it was totally on Zoom. So I would like to make public comment on this.
What's your name, sir?
My name is Robert Armalis.
And so we have your letter.
You do.
And I think your letter, are you absolutely opposed to the no right turn restriction, or is it instead that you would like there to be a comprehensive, a more comprehensive look at that quadrant of the village, or both?
Well, for one, is those right turn. One of the problems there is people are cutting through regularly, and just to come up Lemoyne or Greenfield and make a right turn. So to put that signage in there would just facilitate them doing it faster, which will obviously they're doing it to save time by missing the light. So that's one of the feelings about it. The second feeling is that we have a lot of parking spaces in the alley between the two alleys between Greenfield and then all the way up to the Shell station. You have at least a couple hundred parking spots And anybody who's going to want to head north in those hours is going to have to come the other way. And it's not that easy to go the other way, because if you want to head north on Harlem, you just don't go to down Bonnie Brae and down Bonnie Brae and try to make a left on North Avenue. You're going to have to go a few blocks down and then make a right and then go to North Avenue to get to Harlem. So the other way would be to go to Division. That's quite a bit of driving and quite a bit of traffic with all those cars. By putting this restriction in, it's just going to make the problem worse. Now, yes, I would like a comprehensive look at the whole problem.
And do you have a specific opinion on the proposal to restrict parking? I mean, restrict turns, to not allow left-hand turns during the rush hour times from eastbound traffic on Lemoyne and Greenfield?
Specifically, I just think it's going to facilitate those people cutting through to make the right. They're not cutting through to make the left. So who's making the left? The left are people that live in the neighborhood. That's a dicey turn. Making a left on the Harlem on either Lemoyne or Greenfield is kind of dicey on a safety issue. You know, believe me, I walk across there all the time. So you're restricting the local residents more than I think you're restricting anything else, and you're facilitating the people that have no business in River Forest.
Hey, do you have any other comments?
No, that would be my comment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Are there any other commissioners that would like to speak to this issue?
We don't restrict right turns off of eastbound North Avenue in that area, do we? Because I know further down we do, down near Forest and Keystone and stuff.
East of Lathrop, I don't think there are any southbound turn restrictions from eastbound North Avenue. So no, I don't think we restrict rights onto those side streets.
Yeah. Well, that may be something that would address the issue that the gentleman is talking about. And
yeah, right now, Ashland is the first street you can turn right on once you cross the river heading east.
But then you can turn on the rest of them all the way down, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So maybe that's something that needs to be looked at.
I think with all this being said, we can table this issue. This is a restriction, and I'm typically against them. And it made sense, but if somebody wants to take a more comprehensive view of, especially, you know, we've never looked into alley traffic. We've talked about it a couple times in the last 16 years, but we haven't really addressed it. So with that being said, there might be more chop in this area. And if we want to put that right turn in with a comprehensive look, or at least a discussion with more residents at hand to voice their opinion, especially now that my interest is peaked with this alley traffic. I'm all for tabling this issue now, getting to the meat and potatoes of Monroe, and reviewing this at a later date, maybe with maps in front of us and a couple more residents, so we can come up with a better idea over there in the northeast corner of the village.
One thing I'd like to point out real quick. I was talking to the traffic engineering consultant that we use about, it was actually unrelated. I was going to bring this up later tonight. I was talking to them about the other study you all had discussed at a previous meeting at Hawthorne and Thatcher, and the idea of doing a traffic study for an intersection right now, given where traffic volumes are given how reduced they are. In talking to them, traffic studies right now are borderline useless. They're not going to give us an accurate depiction of the best way to address these issues. We can't even really get a good picture of what these issues are in their totality because, again, traffic numbers are down. So until we, you know, get a more normalized traffic patterns kind of returning, it's going to be difficult to try to rely on any sort of study. And the consultant is basically kind of recommending that we not even do studies right now because they're not going to yield accurate data.
Jeff, I don't know if we need a study for this. This is just more common sense and logic, looking at that quadrant, you know, how people are taking a right off North Avenue to bypass, you know, the corner at Harlem North and get on that. But this was supposed to be kind of a logical addition to the no left turn onto Greenfield and Lemoyne going north. You know, like Bob, I think he was the resident that said it's dicey. So this is more of a safety concern, I suppose, a traffic concern, where people are getting backed up because somebody's trying to take a left. So it's more flow, and it's pretty to those two corners. And it makes sense to me. I have no problem voting on that. And again, like I said previously before Bob jumped in, you know, there's no need to make a mountain out of a molehill and tie these simple corners in with that quadrant, because this makes sense to me. So if we want to table it, we can table it, but I'm up for, you know, Steve, you know, I think Steve had a couple of good points with it is what it is. It makes sense. And it's about flow and safety, and we can go on to Monroe after that. But if you, and we don't have a lot of us here, if you want to put to table this, I'm fine with that.
Jeff, can you check and just see if there's someone waiting to get into the meeting? I saw one comment in the chat about someone trying to get in. That might have already been resolved.
But... yeah, that was Mr. Almalas. There's no, I'm okay, keeping an eye out now. There's nobody else there.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and to Jeff's point about this being a difficult time to count traffic and you might not get a reliable result, I'd suggest that if we decided it made sense on its own merits to restrict to not allow left turns during rush hour, when we eventually do count traffic, we'd be able to see if that's causing more traffic that's cutting through really north. I mean, because the consequence of this would be, it would make it harder for people to go northbound on Harlem. And so we would assume that you would see other people figure out different ways to be able to head north on Harlem by either going to Division or by going or by going to, you know, a northbound street to get to Harlem. So I'd suggest that if we were to adopt this proposal, eventually, if we do study that quadrant, we'd be able to see the consequence.
I just have a question. What residents were made aware of this discussion that we're having? Were there any postcards sent?
So postcards were not sent because this was kind of one of, and for anybody who's on their phone, if they could mute, please. We're getting somebody's, thank you. Postcards weren't sent because this is such a far reaching thing. So we actually advertised this in the Village e-news. So it went out to anybody who subscribes to the Village's e-news, hoping that folks who drive through that area would kind of see that and be made aware of it through those means.
Jeff, are you able to mute people?
Yeah, we'll certainly try here. There we go.
I have to say,
Kim, did you get your? Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
I just never thought, even after reading the public comment, I didn't quite follow until just now that it actually would make it easier for non-residents to pass through. If that's a legitimate concern that more non-residents would be flowing through that area more frequently because there are going to be no holdups because no one's going to be turning left. And that does create a lot more traffic. I think that's a valid concern that we should consider before just accepting it.
I don't understand that concern. I don't know if you, Kim, or you know, somebody else can explain that to me, because
who's going to cut through where
because they can't turn left on those streets?
Someone that's headed east on North Avenue, and they're going to take a right on Bonnie Bray or Clinton or William to Greenfield, and then head toward Harlem and head south. But they can do it more quickly if only people can only turn right, because there will be no backups for them when they're at Harlem. They'll just be able to flow through more quickly. I think that that was the point that I didn't actually understand until he just addressed it in person, that there's a possibility of more flow through, because people are like, oh, I can only turn right here. I'm not gonna have to worry about being backed up with residents turning left. If that's a concern, I would love to hear from more residents than just one before we kind of have our own gut feel opinion on this.
Yeah, I really didn't understand from the letter how that would increase the flow through of non-residents. But after his talk, I guess I can see that, you know, if you turn right onto Bonnie Bray or Clinton and you get over to either Lemoyne or Greenfield and it's all backed up, you really haven't gained anything. But if it's always open because you can only turn right and that's the direction you want to go, then I guess you're going to short circuit that corner by the Shell station and just cut through. So I guess after hearing him describe it that way, I see it a little bit differently.
So the goal is to keep Lemoyne and Greenfield backed up so they're less of an attractive route. That's the argument, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I see what you're saying. I mean, that's why I asked about, are there any no right turn restrictions on North Avenue? And there aren't. So I don't know. I see what you're saying.
It is only, you know, rush hour. And it makes sense. We do have arguments on both sides. And again, this is an issue where we can make bigger or keep it restricted to just this idea. But if you guys want to make this a bigger issue, I'm fine with that. But this is a right turn only from 7 to 9 and 4 to 6 off of those streets. I can't imagine the backups we're talking about with people trying to make left-hand turns during rush hour.
Well, and Kim raises a good point, and I'm not sure, Rick, if you know, but I don't think we're aware of much of a groundswell of support for this proposal. I mean, I think it was a proposal that we thought made sense, you know, common sense, really, from just, you know, people observing the difficulty and the danger of someone trying to turn left onto Harlem from those streets during rush hour. But I don't know if we have a sense that there is, you know, how widespread the support is for this change.
I
table this indefinitely. This could be tabled indefinitely and just go away.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, based on what I've heard tonight, I kind of see maybe that would reduce, you know, people would get upset if someone's trying to turn left and they won't want to cut through as quickly. And just like Johan, you know, I was up there last week sitting on a corner and saw all the cut through going through there. Jeff and I talked about Monroe and what was it, Jackson or something. But yeah, there is a lot of cut through traffic up there and they are not stopping at the stop signs. But that aside, yes, I could see how by allowing the left-hand turns that would slow traffic down a little bit.
So I guess we would just either take no action on this. I don't think we have to formally table it or put it over, but unless anyone wants to make a motion to adopt or to at least recommend this restriction.
Kim, if you make a motion to the effect that we get more local residents' input to strengthen this point or not in a limited time, I will second you.
One more question before I make that motion. Can you just remind me where this came from? I know it's the staff asking our commission, but where?
This came from me, who I'm a commissioner, and it came out of a conversation with a resident that lives on Greenfield who was having a lot of problem turning right because of the left-hand turns. And so it was just something that, you know, we thought that perhaps trying to tie up that no left-hand turn onto Greenfield or onto Lemoyne, we could equal out the same time just to make it easier for residents to get out onto Harlem.
Okay, so it was one resident that talked to you, and that's how it came about. Yes, okay.
And that's how it came about. And so we just, this has been talked about for 6 months. It hasn't been, you know, just last week type of thing.
So I would personally either would like to take note action on this, as Doug brought up, or I would be also happy to wait for feedback from more residents so we can look at both sides of it better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would go with the second option because I think this, despite the COVID year that we had, most of the residents, they are long-term residents and they have some historical memory of how the traffic flow has been over at least a couple of years, if not more. So my thinking is I want to concur that we think about getting more feedback from the residents in that quadrant in a limited time. For example, if we gave them 4 weeks or 3 weeks notice that on a particular time we will discuss this, it'll come before us. Then they must give us the input and we can judge how critical that is, rather than depending on two anecdotal comments.
Jeff, do you have a recommendation? Is there a way to either put on the website or some other way to publicize that this remains an issue that we're considering, but we're interested in finding out if there are more people who want to comment on this proposal?
Yeah, I mean, we could certainly build something into the website, I guess, and try to steer people there. My question to you all would be, how would you like to see us try to steer people there? I mean, again, we advertised this topic and this agenda in the e-news because we think that's the biggest reach we have, right, to all the residents. And we haven't gotten a lot of either support or people just weren't reading that far down onto the e-news. I mean, do you guys want to see postcards to everybody east of Lathrop and north of Division? Do you want to see, and I see the thumbs up, but that's not nothing either. That's a significant effort behind that. So we can do that. We can do,
Jeff, maybe we expand the issue.
Geo-target that. Go ahead.
Jeff, maybe we expand the issue by, you know, bringing up the flow through, the pass through, the usage of the alleyway, since this is obviously becoming a bigger thing, and Commissioner Gillis has mentioned the Northeast quadrant a few times in the past, and now we're getting a little bit of feedback from residents. If we do put a little more meat on this bone on the website saying the pass through rather than just a simple right turn, which isn't going to get anybody, well, it didn't get anybody interested except for two people. So that's already proven. But if we say pass through, you know, southbound, whatever these two streets are here, into Lemoyne, into Garfield, maybe then we can have a conversation on, and I can't even remember the stop signs we put on Lemoyne. Is that now a four-way?
Bonnie Bray and Lemoyne, it's four-way.
It is now, yeah. So, yeah. I just don't know if I, you know, believe that they're going 45 miles an hour when there's a four-way stop sign there. But again, if we want to talk about this quadrant more, and I think some of us do, then we should you know, make the topic larger. If it's in fact a problem, I don't live up there. I live south of Village Hall, so I don't know what kind of problems they're having. I'd be happy to listen to those residents again, because we've handled issues up there previously with that four-way and stuff. But I don't know if we've talked about alleyway use and stuff like that. So that it's interesting to me, and I'll talk about it more if you want to do that. And we'll just table this simple right turn issue.
I guess I'll say for me, I'm really not interested in just having a generalized discussion, you know, without a more precise focus on what we're discussing. At least that's just my bias on this. So, you know, if someone, whether it's a, usually we react to a resident comment, but if it's a resident or a commissioner who has, you know, besides this particular proposal, if there's a desire to articulate, you know, some additional question that we would put on the table, you know, I'd be in favor of that if we could articulate what the question is, so we could communicate to the public what it is we're considering. Well, you know, if, and others may disagree, you know, maybe the view is from the commission as a whole that we ought to just have a general, you know, public discussion about it. But I just fear that that could be, a, you know, maybe it's productive to just get some ideas, you know, if it's kind of in the realm of fact gathering.
Doug, I've got an idea here. You know, right now, I understand what Jeff was saying regarding not doing a study, but do we do a survey for the residents in that area? You know, if we were just to put together something that would ask their, you know, series of questions, their concerns, what they think's good, what they think needs improvement on, that way we could at least summarize it and have some data from the people that live there who could tell us what they think. And then from that, we could react to it. And it would not be a full study, but it would give us some good solid information that would allow more people to feed into us rather than during a meeting where you're gonna hear bits and pieces.
Well, that I like that idea, Rick. I endorse that. And I would suggest that we look at all southbound streets leaving North Avenue, Jackson, Monroe, William, Clinton, Bonnie Bray, just that survey, that whole, and then we've got some returns. So if we have a survey as well as public comment, I think we'll have enough feedback to make a solid decision. Don't you think?
And I'm sorry, I know I'm kind of reiterating this question, but I just want to understand, you guys are obviously have been around this commission longer than I have. So we have heard two residences, one that's a friend of Rick's and one that had opposed the idea. I mean, would it be normal to create a whole study out of just hearing from two residents? Or do we want to let the residents decide if it's a bigger issue to bring it to us?
It's not so much a study as just a survey. That's the reason why.
Who's going to do the survey, and who's, you know, and what are we going to survey?
Well, I'll work with Jeff and we can try to come up with some ideas and then present it at our next meeting, if that makes sense.
So, any comment on that?
Yeah, I totally endorse Rick's idea, because as I said, I have seen traffic go, and it's not necessarily on Bonnie Bray only, it's the longer ones, William and Monroe and Jackson, they pass by Division and go in, and so there is a lot of traffic that cuts through the longer roads, not just the short ones, the two block roads.
So what I'm hearing is a suggestion that Rick, that you're willing to work with Jeff, or you know, try to come up with a proposed survey that you would bring to our next meeting, and then we could discuss it and maybe make any adjustments to the survey and see if the commission's in favor of sending that out.
Yes.
Yeah. Is anyone opposed to that idea?
No.
All right. Well, why don't we, for the sake of moving on, why don't we go ahead and take you up on that, Rick? And that's a generous offer. And I don't know how much you're volunteering, Jeff, to work on this survey. But
he wasn't smiling when I said it.
Jeff, you volunteered in the military sense.
This is what the staff liaison does, so I saw it coming.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and do that, and we'll plan to discuss that if it's ready at the next time we meet.
Just to be clear, we're talking about preparing a survey that would be discussed at the next meeting, and then once you all kind of have a look at that and tweak it one way or another, if at all, then we would advertise it after the May meeting for the July meeting.
Correct. That's my understanding. Rick, is that yours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Why don't we move on? I apologize to the folks about Monroe. I actually thought this issue was going to be quicker. So that's why I took it first. Tatiana, do I pronounce your name correctly? Pytel?
Sorry, I was trying to unmute myself. Yes, that's correct.
No problem. Would you like to address the issue? I think this comes from you primarily, right?
Yeah. My name is Tatiana Pytel. I live in Norway House on Monroe Avenue and North Avenue. I've been living here for about 5 years. We have 25 units in our building, and we have a really big issue with parking. Six of our units don't have assigned parking spaces in the back. The way that our parking works is essentially that we had deeded spaces from, I'm assuming, when the building was built. Since then, some have been sold off, some units have more than one, and it leaves a lot of us without parking. Everyone has one spot for the most part. Lots of people have, you know, more than one car, considering some of our units have three bedrooms. So it's really created an issue with parking. We have had some people have some creative solutions. So some people pay to park in Montessori House. We used to be allowed to park at Fresh Time, but they are no longer allowing us to park there. So people have really nowhere else to go. A lot of us recently received tickets because we just parked on Monroe, again, because there's just no other alternative. Montessori ran out of spots to rent. I spoke to the manager at Fresh Time. They won't allow us to even rent spots from them to park in. So for someone like myself that doesn't have a spot, I legitimately have no other options. I have nowhere else to park. So now I'm parking across the street in Elmwood Park, as are a lot of other residents, just to leave my car somewhere with the hopes that I don't get a ticket, which then creates a safety issue because people are running across the street. And North Avenue obviously has a lot of traffic. So that being said, I petitioned to create a permitted parking zone on Monroe. It would stem from North Avenue through the driveway by Monroe House. So Norway House and Monroe House are actually two separate associations, but I have worked with the president of Monroe House as well, who's on this call, Beth Sconey, with this issue. We're not 100% in agreement necessarily about what it would look like, but we are in agreement that something needs to be done about parking. What I initially suggested was a 24/7 permitted parking zone on Monroe for our residents, specifically Monroe and Norway House residents. Some of the concerns that came back with that is, you know, where will guests park? Where will delivery service or delivery vehicles park or service vehicles park? So something that I think is more aligned with what we're hoping for is maybe a removing the overnight parking restriction and allowing us to purchase maybe city stickers so we can park on that specific space overnight, and then also removing the 2-hour parking restriction that's there as well.
Tatiana, are you through now? I mean, you can speak up later, but should we turn it over to Beth Sconey, maybe? You next, Beth.
Thank you, guys. I prepared a statement. Tatiana covered a lot of what I have on my statement, but I'm just going to read that straight and then can take any questions after that. My name is Beth Sconey, and I'm a resident at 1533 Monroe. in the Monroe House Condominium Association. I am also the board president of that association. And our owners are mixed on this. We do understand the need for the additional parking options. And we have several residents in our association who may benefit from some additional space availability for the parking. But we kind of have a mix of opinions and feel that there should be some considerate planning on this issue to provide a balance to allow for some available parking from guests, food and delivery drivers, and service trucks, as Tatiana mentioned. The proposal, as stated on the petitions that we received, seemed to be pointing towards a 24-hour permit, which would, in my mind, as a former resident of Oak Park, I see that as you pay for the spot and you could stay there 24/7. But for us, we can't fully support that because that kind of puts, you know, a majority of the units at a disadvantage. That would advantage about 10 people for 10 parking spaces, but the other 30 or so units would then no longer have that flexibility to park in front of the building. So we don't support the complete loss of parking spots to permits only. So in talking with Tatiana and some of the other residents, we wanna urge the commission to also consider some additional options. So some of the questions that came up, can several spaces on Monroe Avenue be left open for 2-hour parking to be decided by the commission and the board? Can the west side of Monroe, which is adjacent to Fresh Time, be changed from a 24-hour no parking loading zone to allow for overnight permit parking there and then still be open during the daytime store hours for truck loading? And then thinking about the CVS pharmacy at North Avenue and Thatcher, we were wondering if the village could reach out to Fresh Time Corporate in a way that the residents can't advocate for, to engage in some sort of formalized agreement for official overnight parking via permit in a portion of their lot. Because the CVS does have that for some of the townhomes that are right by North Avenue and Thatcher. So we thought that maybe if the village approached corporate headquarters, something could be worked out in that arrangement. So we just ask that the commission please explore these other options before creating a full 24/7 permit zone in front of both buildings, because this would take away any parking for our family, friends, and any service providers that we need to have come to the buildings. So I just want to thank you for the time and the consideration.
All right, thank you, Beth. Thank you. I think what I'd like to do is see if there are other members of the public who want to speak to these issues, then we'll turn it over to the commissioners to ask questions, and they may have questions of you guys too, okay? So I noticed there are some other folks. I see one's named listed as Bart. You just went off mute. Would you like to speak to this issue?
Yeah, just I have something real quick to say about it. I also live in Norway House, so I'm a resident there.
And I'm sorry, do you mind just giving us your name, your first and last name, just so we have it?
Bart Marczyk, Marczyk.
Did you get that?
Like I said, I also live in the building, and I'm also suffering from these parking issues. And the only place really to park for us is on the side where there is that 2-hour parking restriction, then it's overnight restriction from 2 to 6 p.m. And for the most part, I understand why there's just restrictions in place, even across the street with the loading zone. So I think an easy solution or something that'd be a lot easier to implement would just be changing the sign from no parking overnight from 2 to 6 and just maybe making it like a resident only parking from 2 to 6, and then just leave the restrictions for daytime parking, the 2-hour parking. So, I mean, I think that's, out of all the solutions, maybe the simplest and easier to explore, but that's kind of my input on it.
All right, thank you, Bart. There are a few other people on the call. Would anyone else like to speak to this issue?
Yes.
All right, well, would you give us your name and tell us where you live, please?
Judith Lamparis. I live in Monroe House. I am in a household with 2 cars, and my son has experienced the same problems. And there is one of my neighbors has 2 cars in their household, too, and with the same problem. And So I concur with Beth. I think she made a good case about the 24/7. And the gentleman who just made the proposal about lifting the overnight ban for that area, I think that's a good proposal. But I agree we need some daytime spaces. So I would suggest possibly limiting the number of permits for if it's 24/7 for sure, so that there are some free daytime spaces, or if it isn't 24/7, which is a better approach in my opinion, to allow overnight parking in front of Monroe and Norway House from North Avenue to our driveway on the southern end. And it's a necessary thing. Our options are limited, and they've been clearly articulated by the other people who've already spoken. So that's my take.
Thank you, Judith. Mm-hmm. I see another caller on, I think. Is there anyone else who'd like to address this? All right. Why don't we turn it over to the commissioners, and then if there's someone else who wants to speak up, let us know. Would any commissioners like to address this proposal?
I guess I'd like to ask Jeff, you know, we have a lot of these multi-unit buildings in the village. Do any of them allow 24-hour parking so that they're not subject to the overnight parking ban at any of the other buildings in the village that have, you know, these multiple units like this? Are we doing this somewhere else?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't believe the village, multifamily or not, I don't believe the village has any other on-street 24/7 parking anywhere really right now. We have lots, so, you know, there's the East Thatcher lot, excuse me. So just by the train station there, like I know we have overnight parking, specific overnight parking passes and some 24-hour passes for that lot. So I know there are some allowances for that on village-owned property, but those are all off-street as far as I know.
And this whole issue has been precipitated by Fresh Thyme backing out of the agreement that they apparently had or something that was allowing these folks to park over there. Is that what's causing this to change now?
Yes.
Okay.
There was never a formal agreement. I've approached them numerous times for a formal agreement, and it was more so kind of like there's no sign that says you can't, so we're not going to pursue anything if you park here. I think that speaks to the desperation that there's just really no other alternatives. But there was never an actual agreement prior to Fresh Thyme opening up. There people didn't park in that lot, and again it was just the same issue that's gone on now, but I'm not sure why it hasn't really been addressed previously.
I guess my if I just say one more thing my then following up with that my feeling is I'm sympathetic to the issue, but I'm a little concerned about, you know, someone else wrote a letter about not allowing or why you wouldn't want to have 24-hour parking and why we don't have it throughout the village. And I'm kind of responding to that in the sense that if we allow it here, does it open the door that in other multi-unit dwellings, we're going to start getting requests for this? And before you know it, we're not going to have it in the village. And would a better approach be what someone suggested, that someone from the village try to approach Fresh Thyme and see if they can negotiate some sort of way for these people to park in their lot overnight? That's my two cents.
I'm completely in line with Steve on this. This would set a precedent that I'm not interested in getting into in River Forest. Next thing you know, we're gonna have dibs on Monroe in the middle of winter time.
Oh my.
We need to exhaust, like somebody brought up before, I think we need to exhaust all private options in the neighborhood because as one of the residents said, you know, now there are units with multiple spots behind the condominium that is creating the need for parking outside of the specific parking spaces for the association, which is now our problem. They should have thought about this as an association. When we build now in the village, it's one space per unit. And then the owner, if they have more than one car, they find a place to put it, or in the city or this village or other villages when they build. So this is just a really slippery slope here. And I'm really not into it, but I think through the village with a lot of those parking areas off of North Avenue, the healthcare facility, like you said, Fresh Time, the church, we need, as an HOA, they might want to pursue that. Perhaps the village can help out with that. But as a overnight parking situation in the village anywhere, I'm against it.
Could you just clarify two things for me, Ms. Vitale? Number one, was the informal arrangement with Fresh Time for overnight parking or for parking in general? Could you answer that question?
It was for parking in general. Essentially, they have a back portion of their lot that isn't used very frequently. And so that just became somewhere that people started parking. Most of the time it was overnight. People would move their cars to go to work in the morning, but they also were parking there during the day.
Okay. So the next question is this. I think this ties in with John, Commissioner Oscar, and Commissioner Wade's points. There are several places in the village that have unused parking overnight. Methodist Church on Lake Street being an example, where they have an income stream for limited parking to the public. And so perhaps there's a way in which we can find that if we had, you mentioned the St. Vincent Ferrer Church, you mentioned Fresh Time and similar ones. What if we, as the village, approaches these places and say, there is precedence near the trains, for example, access to the station where churches and other places rent their unused space for limited time, and that this becomes an income stream with certain restrictions. I can see overnight parking being one of those restrictions. Then we might find that we can have a happy medium. Does that sound a workable solution, Ms. Vitale?
I guess, are you saying parking on North Ave? You're saying parking in Fresh Time, for example? No.
Yes.
I'm
saying that these unused spaces, whether commercial or church, private and so on, if one were to incentivize this as an income stream for overnight parking, let's say, by these commercial and church-related entities that don't use their parking, would that satisfy your need?
I guess I'm not sure. I would have to see what that looks like, but I think the concern is that is a pro. I mean, personally, I have gone to Fresh Time. I've spoken to their management. I've asked about setting it up. I don't know if that, is an option.
All due respect, that's not my question.
Okay.
You asked us if we would want to propose to the village administration to explore the option of approaching Fresh Time. What I'm saying is, should we request this, we will be able to make an argument based on the precedent that other places have an income stream for overnight parking or limited parking. If that is not an option that you are seeking and does not do that, then unfortunately we have to retreat back to a position that might not be as favorable to you. John is absolutely right. when associations sell parking spaces for profit or for whatever reason, we as the village don't have much to stand on when they violate their own fair play of one unit, one parking space. At that point, we are now in a position where we can advocate for you, saying maybe there is a middle ground, and I'm exploring the middle ground option that all the other commissioners have proposed, and I'm putting this forward as a viable proposition that I would make a motion for the traffic commission to approach the village administration with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that would be, as long as it, if that was something that could happen, I think that would be a viable
option. That's what I need. Ms. Sconey, you seem to be nodding your head. Is that a proposition that seems attractive to you?
Yeah, I like that. I did put that in my statement. And what I will say in Ms. Vitale's defense, I guess you could say, is that not every unit in Norway House did come with a deeded parking spot. So it's not like there's a case where there's units that now have two cars and they're looking for extras. There are, I think you mentioned six units that have zero. They have no parking options at this point. So anything that the village could do to pursue these other avenues would be definitely welcome, especially by those people that have zero options at this point.
Right. And my proposal is, and I will probably, if we need to make a motion, that the village approaches those instances, the St. Ferrer Church and Fresh Time, with a proposal on the precedent that this is an income stream for others in similar situations. Might they consider that on limited parking basis?
So, Johan, do you mind holding your motion and we'll finish the comment and then bring your motion at the end of the comment period? Is that okay?
That's good. That's good. No problem.
Okay.
Can I interject one thing real quick, Chairman? I have no problem reaching out to some of these properties. I guess this would be more for Ms. Sconey and Ms. Pytel. I guess what I don't want to do is start wandering too far away from your properties and reaching out to everyone in the village, you know, to see if they're open to this. And then as Commissioner Bass pointed out, there's a church at Lake and Thatcher that has plenty of space, but I'm assuming that wouldn't work for your needs if it's all the way across town. So, I mean, are we, and I'll throw this back out to the commission. Are we limiting ourselves to St. Vincent Ferrer and Fresh Time? Are we, you know, Loyola might be a different story. I don't know if they're a 24-hour facility, but you know, we can't necessarily violate some of these other planned developments either if they are required to have a maintained number of parking spaces too. So those are some of my initial concerns. Another concern I have is that we recently spent quite a bit of effort trying to reach out to, there is a parking deck at William and Central owned by the medical facility down that way. Now, we have some residents in that area, similar situation, multifamily properties on Lake Street that were looking for off-street parking 24/7. So spent a considerable amount of time and effort kind of reaching out to that property owner, and they ultimately, they were uninterested. The revenue stream wasn't substantial enough for them to be interested in it. And the village is not in a position where we're not going to be managing, permits and taking money from residents and passing that off to property owners. So that's not something we would be managing either. But again, to kind of step back to the beginning, I'm happy to reach out to some of these properties and just see if that's something they'd be willing to do. I just want to make sure that I'm only reaching out to properties that you folks, Ms. Pytel and Ms. Sconey, are actually interested in utilizing if they're on board.
It sounds like they're interested for sure in having the village reach out to Fresh Time. The question is there a second property besides Fresh Time you all would be interested in having the village reach out to?
The church.
Is there agreement that the church would be similarly convenient? if that's a feasible option.
Yes, I would agree with that. It's about a 2-block walk, probably a little less than that. And no, you don't have to cross any major streets or wait for the light or anything. I had not even thought of the Loyola location, but that is also relatively close. If you're faced with no spots, you know, a few blocks walk is not too bad.
So the idea, I guess I would suggest, you know, I don't know if this needs to be a formal motion, it probably doesn't, but just say that if the village is willing to reach out on an initial basis to Fresh Time and to the church, that would be a good place to start to see if maybe the way to the village, and I know this is more gentle persuasion probably than any kind of a heavy hand, but to see if there's some way to initiate a discussion that might facilitate them accommodating you in some way, at least as a starting point. Is that, at least that's one option. We're not foreclosing others at this point, but is there any opposition to at least doing that as a starting point?
No, I think that's a good starting point.
Can you give me an approximate number of vehicles and ultimately what you'd be looking for? Are we looking for overnight? Are we looking for 24 hour, you know, 50 cars 24/7 might be a different story than 10 cars overnight only. So if we're going to start that conversation, I'd like to at least give them an idea of what you'd be looking for.
From our building standpoint, there's at least 6 that would need it. And then I don't know for Beth, how many do you think from Monroe House?
I think based on what Judy Lomperis said, probably 2 to 3 for people that have either no spot right now or have an additional car.
Yes, that sounds right to me.
So it sounds like we're looking at 10.
We'll say 10 to 15 vehicles, at least that's the neighborhood. And then what would you be looking for, 24/7, overnight only?
Overnight only for me.
I think it would probably be an easier sell to do overnight only. I guess it depends on the level of their willingness. You know, if they're willing to do 24/7, great. But I think overnight only would satisfy most of the needs.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you.
Are there other commissioners that want to speak to this issue in one way or the other?
Well, I'll just, okay, I'm off mute. Yeah, I'm going to say I agree. I don't want to get on that slippery slope as far as opening up 24 on the street. And I totally agree. Let's start with a letter to the church and Fresh Time from the village. And they probably will be more willing to have a conversation with Jeff about this. And we'll see what happens.
Thank you.
Any other commissioners want to speak to this?
I agree the same.
One question I have, and I'm in favor of trying first to see if some accommodation could be made at either the church or Fresh Time, but I guess looking at the map, I'd ask the question whether it's feasible to install diagonal parking in that area to increase spaces.
Which area? I'm sorry.
I'm looking at on the map what I don't know if it was Titania who provided this or Jeff, but the dotted area on the map that was proposed, right adjacent to the 2 condo buildings on Monroe, it looks tight there by the sidewalk, but I was wondering about the feasibility. I don't know if it would include moving the sidewalk at all, but, and I don't know what the right way is there, but whether, because I noticed that behind the building on the east side, there are some diagonal spots. And I was wondering if adding diagonal spaces in that section would just even be a feasible alternative.
The issues that typically come up whenever we've discussed adding diagonal spaces to an on-street area within other contexts are, to your point, A, you can't move the sidewalk because it's probably up against the property line already, so that's probably not going anywhere. You can't typically put it within the existing footprint of the roadway just because those diagonal spaces take up much more depth into the roadway off the curb than a parallel space, and that would really pinch things off over there. So what you'd probably be looking at is having to move the curb line up to the sidewalk and then basically putting roadway through the parkway and removing those parkway trees. So it does get a little pricey when you start to take those things into consideration.
Right. And if the sidewalk had to be moved, I assume that would, which building is to the south? Is that Norway House or is that Monroe House?
Monroe's to the south and Norway's to the north.
So if the sidewalk moved, it would go onto Monroe property, presumably?
It would go onto both properties.
Depending on the length of the diagonal spaces.
But yeah, depending, because it looks like Norway House goes pretty much all the way to the sidewalk now. But anyway, it doesn't seem like that's a short-term solution, but I was just throwing that out as to whether that would be a feasible long-term solution, but it would be disruptive. I mean, it would entail removing the parkway trees, probably several of them, if not all of them. Potentially, you know, adjusting, moving the sidewalk onto the current private land owned by the condo association. But, you know, if the condo associations wanted this parking, I'm just throwing that out as to whether that's at all a feasible alternative to consider down the road.
If I could jump in for just a moment, the concern for me would be that this street does still take truck traffic to the back end of Fresh Time. So I'm not sure that the width would be there even if you did cut into the parkway.
And does that truck traffic, Beth, come both directions?
It can.
I think it can. I think it's usually probably coming off of North Avenue, taking a right onto Monroe. But I'm not sure. I think they can come both directions.
Okay. And they do when they leave. When they leave the Fresh Time parking lot, they turn either right or left towards North Avenue. So they're going the opposite way. They come from North Avenue and they go back to North Avenue. So they go both directions. But even if we had diagonal parking spaces, the problem is not so much the number of spaces. It's just overnight space. We have enough room. It's just the overnight situation, which has already been addressed in a different way.
And, you know, I hear the commissioners who don't want to open, you know, the slippery slope argument, but is there any interest in considering a limited overnight parking in that area, given that you've got a grocery store on one side and the affected condo buildings on the other? It sounds like I'm not hearing any interest in that, but is there any interest in exploring some kind of a residential zoned parking that would allow overnight parking there? Is there any interest in that?
I don't think so, but I think, let's see what Jeff can do with his letter to the church and to Fresh Time. And if that doesn't work, then I think we can revisit some discussion here.
Yeah, because I mean, it's like what Jeff was talking about before. If you consider that area at Lake and William, you know, you could say, well, you know, Jewel is over there and the post office, and then you start to get in that same sort of thing, right? Where it's like, it's going to open up the floodgates and we're going to start seeing more of these requests.
Yeah. I'll be honest. One of my thoughts, and I'm just going to throw this out, it's going to be a can of worms, but do you put the overnight parking on North Avenue in front of the building as opposed to Monroe? I don't know what the concerns are, if there were any with the police or fire department, but that could be an option as well. You could get your 10 spots in front of there. But I think we can discuss that and study that further.
What is the, Tatiana, right? Mm-hmm. Tatiana or Beth, what is the current parking allowance on North Avenue?
I'm not sure. I would say probably, I don't know if 10 would fit, but maybe 8. There's still no overnight parking that's allowed on North Avenue currently.
It's correct.
Are there other hourly restrictions on that block?
It's currently unrestricted on North Avenue, but as Ms. Pytel pointed out, it's still within River Forest, so it would still be considered to have the overnight ban, even though there's no hourly restriction.
Okay. Any other commissioners want to speak to this issue? So, I mean, at this point, it sounds like the consensus on the commission is to see if the village staff can work their magic in convincing the grocery store, the church, to accommodate these folks. And if not, we would probably bring this back to another meeting to see if we could explore some other options. Is that where we're landing? I'm seeing general nods.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Any other comments on this issue? Okay. Are there other matters of business to bring up tonight? I think that John-
The thing I wanted to bring up was the possibility of now meeting in person at the Village Hall for the upcoming meetings.
Jeff, what is the status of any meetings within the village right now?
I think right now our capacity for the community room is increased. I think it was like a maximum of 10 for a while. I believe now we can fill up to half of the room, like the maximum capacity of the room, which is probably 60, 75, somewhere in that neighborhood. So
would the rule be to maintain some amount of distancing plus wear masks? Is that the protocol?
That would still be required, I would imagine. I mean, I'd have to run this through our village manager, but portions of the village board meet in there. I don't know how that would work from a spacing standpoint with microphones and everything, because I know the full board doesn't meet there. So I'd have to kind of figure out just how well that would work, quite frankly, unless it was decided that only three of you or something wanted to meet in person and the rest of you wanted to remain on Zoom, then that would obviously work. So if that's something you're interested in, and we're going to at least go back to a portion of in-person meeting, it's not outright rejected at this point. We just have to make sure it works.
Is that something that's really the call of the village administration to decide whether to allow that? I don't know how much, in other words, no. We could express our preference, but then what?
So I know, because I know the board operates a little bit differently than we're doing. Most of the commissions are still meeting remotely just because it's generally easier. But I know President Adusti is present for the board meetings, and our village manager is present along with a couple of support staff. So, with this commission, if you were to say, we want all the commissioners there, we could probably make that work. And then, public comment or that, maybe we could accommodate up to 5 or 10 residents, which typically works for a meeting for the Traffic Safety Commission. So I think that can work, but that's all set. I don't know if that comes down from the county or the state, but we're basically following the rules that are handed down to us. But how that works from a spacing within the room and people have to wear masks and that sort of thing, it becomes more of an internal discussion with our administration.
And I bring this up only because that I appreciate the resources that Village has. It's easier for me to be in front of the commission as well as have the maps at hand, so forth and so on, so we can quickly address, for instance, the first issue was Bonnie Bray from North to Greenview, Greenfield, and that's easier to bring up in the meeting room. This is not a political statement.
On that point, Jeff, are you likely to share maps and things that you can have, or don't you have that facility? Where You can't share those maps other than still maps, can you?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
When we meet at Village Hall, you bring up maps and you are interactive with that. I'm asking, do you have the same ability on Zoom to share maps that are interactive like you do in Village Hall?
Yes, anything that I've shared before at Village Hall, it's the same computer, I just bring it home with me now. So anything I've shared at Village Hall, I would just share my screen here. Similar to what we do at Village Hall. It's a little bit different because I'm not doing it through Zoom, but yeah, we can certainly do that.
So that can be
that wouldn't be an issue.
That can be a backup situation if we cannot meet at Village Hall.
Yeah, it just becomes a little bit disjointed. What if there's potential for some disjointedness if some of you are remote and some of you are in person, depending on how those things are being shared. If it's via Zoom, everybody can see it. If it's shared just in the boardroom, that's only the people in the boardroom can see it. So there's a little bit of, you know, conflict there, for lack of a better term. But ultimately, if any of you are in the boardroom, I'm down there anyway. So if anybody's in person, I'm second in line there. So at that point, you can consider me always being in the boardroom.
I suspect that the state's not going to change their rules probably until the end of the summer anyway. You know, personally, I'd rather stay where I am right now before I get vaccinated. I like you guys and ladies, but I feel safer here.
If I'm looking at the current executive order, at least the executive order issued January 15th, I think he's issued another one in February and will be issuing one in March. But the restriction as of January was meetings were still restricted to 10 people or fewer. I don't know if that's been adjusted since.
I think that has been adjusted. Like I said, I know we were at 10 for a while there when everybody kind of went to remote. I think that has been within the last, don't hold me to this, I think within the last couple of months that's been relaxed a little bit. I had Commissioner Oskin had brought this up a while ago, so maybe a couple of weeks ago. So I talked to one of our other staff members who staffs different commissions, and what they told me was I think at this point we're at a 50% of room capacity threshold. So that's my current understanding.
Well, I guess we just wait and see what we can do then. We have a couple of months until we see, you know, until we get together again. I just brought it up as, you know, get back to normal, get back to our resources, get back together in front of each other. It helps me think to be in a group setting with like, again, our resources in front of us. So it is what it is. If we can't do it, we can't do it. I just threw it out there to the group. If we can't make the decision, then it's moot anyway. But let us know, and we'll see you guys in a couple months.
Okay, any other business for this evening? Is there a motion to adjourn?
Before you do, real quick, I just want to clarify, we had previously talked about Thatcher and Hawthorne. I did talk to the consultant, as I mentioned, and doing a study there does not sound like an efficient use of time or money. So, you know, that was related to the crosswalk that we were talking about putting in, and it was, well, let's hold off on the crosswalk, let's do the study first, see if we can change the stop control at the intersection, and then how does the crosswalk play off of that? Now that the study is essentially put on hold, how do we want to handle the crosswalk? And I don't need an answer on that tonight. If we want, we can put that on the agenda for the next meeting as well, because obviously we're not quite at a point where we're putting, you know, curb and sidewalk work in the ground yet. So we've got some time, but I think we need to consider, do we want to hold off on the crosswalk in its entirety until we can do the traffic study? Do we want to slap something down at Gale and Hawthorne just as a placeholder? you know, I think that might, we might need to discuss that and come up with a temporary or a long-term plan for kind of both of those, if you will.
I guess one question I have, Jeff, is regardless of traffic counts, isn't there some value in having the traffic engineers comment on the current situation, which has a yield sign and the propriety, you know, and the location of the crosswalks? Because it would seem to me that we could benefit from having their expertise on those things that won't necessarily be affected by traffic counts.
Yes, I mean, if we want to take a snapshot of the existing intersection and its stop control, we could certainly get an opinion from them on it, but I think they would have a hard time telling us, you know, yeah, maybe we don't like this yield sign here, but they can't necessarily say put a stop sign here or take the yield sign out and do nothing here when they don't know what the traffic volumes are. So, you know, they might give us an idea of, yeah, this is a weird intersection and it's kind of confusing, but I don't think they would be able to tell us here are your better solutions because it's all going to be dependent upon the traffic volumes.
Well, what about leaving aside maybe the intersection itself? We're talking about a crosswalk and there's been a suggestion of trying to see if it could fit in at Thatcher. Another proposal is to put it directly at the entrance of the train station. And a third option is to put it at the end of Gale where you currently have a curb cut. And we could all have our opinion on where that makes the most sense. What about that issue? I mean, I'm wondering if short of a formal study, if they could give us a view on the pros and cons of locating the crosswalk at those areas.
Okay, kind of irrelevant of what might or might not happen at the intersection of Thatcher and Hawthorne.
I mean, that's just one suggestion that I have. I know that Kim and I walked down there, we talked to, you know, some interested neighbors, and I think you could make a case that putting the intersection in the middle of the block, like right at the entrance to the train station where it had been proposed, doesn't make as much sense because then you're interrupting traffic in the middle of the block. You know, it's not where they're used to seeing a crosswalk. And by doing that, you might need additional signage or flashing lights or something. So, you know, an expert might say you're really better off to put the crosswalk, you know, if whether it could feasibly fit in at Thatcher, or if it makes them more sense at Gale, you know, at least I for one would feel more comfortable if we had the input from traffic experts who could at least give us some pros and cons of the locations of those of where that crosswalk might be most effective.
Yeah, if you're all in agreement on that, or at least the majority of you, I can certainly reach out to them and just kind of try to get a quick opinion on those general layouts. This was all packaged together with the intersection study because that was where the conversation left off. So with that kind of being the case now, if that's the direction you guys want to take, I can certainly reach out to them and see if I can get an opinion on that from them and then bring that back to you at the next meeting and then have the idea of basically just sitting on that intersection itself until things kind of return back to normal or as close as we can get to it before we do a formal study.
I think that's a great idea because we still have a residence needs to address. And if that might help us address them before we do a full study, that would be great.
Yeah, I think we've spent enough money with them that we can probably squeeze an opinion out of them on that area. So, you know, regardless of a traffic study per se, an opinion would be nice. I know a lot of fine residents down there that will probably have their own opinion. And I really look forward to doing something nice and proper over there because I think it's an important issue that I'm looking forward to dealing with.
So we can certainly do that. I don't see a big problem getting a quick opinion out of them just within this box, if you will. My question to you all would be, I'll paper that up on the next agenda. do you, you know, I've traditionally just been notifying. I talked to Ms. Hewlin because I know that was her property right there. So we talked to her about that mid-block crossing. I obviously have been talking to the original requester who lives over at Thatcher and Hawthorne. Do you all want to see any kind of additional notification about crosswalks and soliciting more public opinion for this particular item? If I'm going to pay, because the only reason I ask is obviously if I'm going to paper it up for the next agenda, I have to then be ahead of that with some sort of notification if we're going to be wanting that.
I guess maybe we need some options to present before we put it out there. Because
they would be presented though, right? At the next meeting, I would hopefully have an opinion. We've got the three on the table, Thatcher and Hawthorne, Galen Hawthorne, or mid-block. We would get an opinion right from the consultant on all three of those. And if I've got that and we're ready to discuss it at the next meeting, if I can notify residents per your kind of direction, if that's, we can wrap that all into one meeting. Otherwise we go to the next meeting with the opinion, you all discuss it. But if we want to bring in resident input, now we're a second meeting out from that.
So Jeff, are you suggesting that we could solicit more resident input on those three options is one option, or another option would be wait, get the opinion, and then notify the appropriate residents?
Those are our options, and not necessarily even, I don't want to suggest I'm not soliciting public opinion, but if you want to discuss and try to come up with a direction to move forward on, or at least to recommend to the board at your next meeting, if we want to solicit whatever public input the public wants to provide, is there a region that we want to notify ahead of the next meeting? If we can, if you guys are good with, you know, me reaching out to Ms. Hewlin and the immediate property owners along Hawthorne, on the south side of Hawthorne there, if that's all we want to notify, I'll notify them. I'll tell them we're going to talk about it at the next meeting, and we'll have some opinions from a consultant, and that'll be that. If you all want opinions from commuters and, you know, everybody from Hawthorne down to Washington, I want to make sure that we don't walk into next meeting with you all ready to make a decision, and then we're talking about, well, we don't have a lot of public input here. You know, maybe we need to kick this out another meeting and try to get more public opinion. However you want to do it is fine, but if you want to try to come out of the next meeting with a direction, I just want to make sure that we're reaching out to the residents that you all want to hear from.
I defer to Kim and Doug on that.
I'm pausing because I don't know the right answer. I would love to get something done for the resident that brought it up. I think getting hearing from other local residents is great, but I don't want to I don't want to make it the bigger issue. So I kind of am deferring to the rest of the commission on how you would handle something similarly and use those same guidelines in terms of how far reaching you go.
Yeah, see, I'm similarly conflicted because I hate to put it off effectively 4 months. On the other hand, I think there'd be value in having the input from the experts, if you will, if they have a fairly strong view that the crosswalk would work best in one place, almost if they ranked them or something, you know, this is the best, this is second best, this is third best. I think it would be more productive to give that information to the neighbors and maybe commuters to let them know, to, you know, with that input in mind, rather than just solicit, you know, input generally. But, you know, I do think that's a tough one.
For what it's worth,
wasn't there also an issue with a stop sign on Hawthorne coming east?
Well, but that's one of the issues, John. I think right now we're talking about tabling until we are able to do a more thorough study there.
Okay.
The only other things I want to throw out right now are if we get into a position where we don't have a direction coming out of the May meeting, we're doing our curb and sidewalk work annually, typically June and July. So if we're pushing to the third Wednesday in July before a decision is made, there's pretty high likelihood that we're kind of done with our curb and sidewalk work. So that mid-block one, which would require curb and sidewalk work, that becomes a little trickier if we can get this, you know, if that's the route we want to take. If we're down at Gale and Hawthorne, we're on an existing crosswalk, we're not making changes other than installing signage and maybe some striping, that's fine. If we have to do the mid-block one, that's going to require more work. That work will be taking place in June and July. To your point, Mr. Chairman, I think if the way I would see this play out is, you know, I can reach out to the consultant later this week and request an opinion from them on these three locations. I would think I can get that from them by the end of the month. So we would have all of May, or excuse me, all of April and part of May with their opinion in hand. Certainly by the time the agenda is posted for the main meeting, I would be able to wrap their opinion in with the agenda documents, which would be posted. So any residents that were notified, regardless of how we notify them, when we notify residents, all we're doing is saying, hey, something's going on in your neck of the woods or something that you might be interested in, go to the village website, here's the agenda, and check it out. That documentation would be there. So I think the timeline could work without a problem.
I might suggest that if we can do that, and while I like the idea of notifying commuters, given that commuting is way off even more than what you were talking about with respect to traffic, I would think that if we were to notify people on whether it's the 1, 2, and 3, you know, the blocks of at least Gale and Thatcher, I don't know if you extend it to Keystone, but at least Thatcher and Gale, you know, I would think to let them know that this is going to be on the agenda would be appropriate. I don't know.
Hawthorne down to what?
Well, at least Washington. I'm not sure if you go all the way down to Madison or not, but at least okay. To Washington, I think. I mean, it's an arbitrary line because people who live down there are going to be probably the heaviest users of those full three blocks. So.
Okay.
I don't know. If you do it electronically, Jeff, I suppose there's not a big cost. Is that kind of what you're thinking? It would be an electronic notification or?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't really have electronic communication means for geo.
I see. So this would be a postcard method. I'm sorry.
Correct. This particular one. If you said, I think we should just reach out to all commuters. You know, I can indirectly reach out to anybody who had a monthly permit pass or something like that, and we have their emails. So there are ways to kind of use what we have to try to target folks. But if we're just doing it based on region, there is not really an electronic way to do that.
Actually, the permit pass would be drivers, right? And we actually are trying to get pedestrians.
Fair. Yep. Yep.
So that probably wouldn't That's be true. Helpful.
True.
I would think.
Yeah, I would imagine. I'm sorry.
I would think just reaching out to the residents on Gale and Thatcher from Madison to the tracks would be sufficient. Keystone wouldn't necessarily be as relevant because they have their own crosswalk to cross the street at the corner of Keystone and Hawthorne.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was going to say, I can't imagine anyone in that area other than the people immediately south of Hawthorne being too concerned about, you know, the plans there with the crosswalk. I think everyone would be in favor of it.
Okay. Then yeah, what I would probably just end up doing is putting those postcards together 3 weeks out from that May meeting and obviously have all the documentation on the website by then and just telling them that, you know, it's up here, go take a look and give me any feedback that you have similar to what we've been doing for all these other meetings.
So the just to put a pin in this, Jeff, so the idea would be they'd be notified that this would be addressed. And then the hope is to let them know, look, that before the May meeting, we would post the view of the traffic consultant on kind of what their recommended location is. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I always try to have, and this goes for any meeting that we hold, when I send the notification postcards out or whenever we post something in e-news for notification to residents that something's going to be discussed at a future traffic and safety meeting, I always try to get the traffic and safety agenda posted on the website prior to that. So if there's a big rush of people who get these things and want to look, it's there. It's not, okay, maybe I'll be there next week or next Friday. I always try to do that. So in this particular case, I don't see a problem getting the opinion from the engineer within the next month. And that gives me a couple of weeks to put the agenda together and post it before those postcards would actually go out.
Perfect.
That sounds good.
Good. It's a plan.
Okay. Any other business? Still better than I thought. Hour and 35.
The one meeting I missed, you guys were finished in 59 minutes.
I know. Well, Kim, draw whatever conclusion you want.
I mean, I'm even in Florida now and I'm on this call. So,
well, guess what? You're on the call. Now we have to go longer.
Exactly. I can miss it next time if you want.
All right. Well, Beth and Tatiana, thank you for participating. And
thank you for having us and listening to the concerns. We appreciate your help with this.
You bet. Thanks, everyone. And stay safe and healthy. And we'll see you all in a couple months. And to those in the condos, we'll hope that the village is able to do something. And if not, we'll see what we can address it at the future meeting.
Beth and Tatiana, I think you both have my email address. So, I'll start putting together some letter to those properties within the next week or so, and I'll get that off. So if you have any questions or that, just feel free to shoot me an email and I'll keep you guys updated as we go.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Chairman, I make a motion to adjourn.
Seconded.
All right.
All those in favor.
All in favor. Aye.
Aye.
All right. Thanks, everybody.